Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on the entire internet. Thanks for watching. Let's get straight to the docket. A little further analysis on the Vallo Daybell hearing. Second, more firings in the Breonna Taylor matter. Third, past performance is indicative of future results. And our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. And also, don't forget to hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, first, I want to hit on the subject of the Lori Vallo, Chad Daybell hearing that took place yesterday and is being continued for final closing arguments tomorrow, Friday, at 1 p.m. We will bring it to you live. Now, I watched the some 6 or 7 hours of streaming of it yesterday, and I could not wait for it to end. It was painful at some point. Now, I get it. I've been a defense attorney. I'm still a defense attorney. Sometimes you got to make a record, and you're making your record. You know you're not going to win. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am going to be in this particular case. I think the court finds that there is no violation by the prosecutor, Mr. Woods, in regards to his conversation with Lori Vallo's sister and basically telling her this is generally what's going on, trying to let her know, the aunt of a victim in the case, of how the case is proceeding and acknowledging that her sister's in a tight spot. And if she were to cooperate, obviously that would be better for her. What prosecutor wouldn't tell that to somebody? Criticizing the defense attorney. Yeah, probably should have kept his opinions to himself. But as Mr. Woods states, really not competent. He's never conducted a felony trial on his own, let alone a homicide case. And that's really what this boils down to. And when he is not saying that I'm a liar, which was referring to Mr. Means making allegations early on that somehow they were listening to his telephone calls at the jail. And we know how that hearing went. Denied. You don't get a bond reduction because you think there was a violation at the jail. Completely unrelated. Somebody that had practiced criminal law would know that. And in this particular case, I just don't get why either of the attorneys in this case filed or adopted this particular motion. First of all, do you think if you get the prosecutor disqualified, this case is going away? No, it is not. You just get another prosecutor. And frankly, Mr. Wood seems like he's been pretty mellow throughout this. If you get a prosecutor appointed that wants his 15 minutes of fame, he may be a little more zealous. So I'm not sure tactically why they thought this was going to happen. Second of all, we said it the other day, if you're going to take a shot at the king, you better kill the king. The king in this particular case is Mr. Wood. There's nothing there, in my opinion, that amounts to misconduct. Even their own experts, if you watch the entire proceedings, when Mr. Pryor tried to ask, is this a crime? Is this an ethical violation? Their own experts hedged on answering that question and said, well, it maybe could be, and certainly is prohibited if you do this in front of a jury. But since this wasn't done in front of a jury, and I think the really interesting question was also asked by Mr. Evans, the co-prosecutor on the case, when he asked, what if this Miss Triplett is never called? What if the sister of Lori Vallo is never called? How does that affect it? Well, it doesn't. And nobody called the witness who was actually interviewed. Even their attorney for the person that was interviewed by the police that volunteered to go speak with the police never said that it changed her testimony, that she was intimidated in any way whatsoever. I get it. You think, oh, in a perfect world, this is the way it should be done. I get you get a law professor say, well, these are the rules of conduct and this should never be done and I would never do that. And I agree. I tell my attorneys all the time, I've never met a client worth going to jail for and I've never been paid enough money to lose my law license. So the bottom line is, would Mr. Woods probably like to have taken a couple of those comments back regarding Mr. Means Yes, but it doesn't result in the case being taken away from Mr. Woods as a special prosecutor. And then you're just going to get it anyway. Now, two other observations that I made about this is I don't understand why they brought this case, because had this witness been called at trial, can you imagine the cross-examination that could have been done with that? But yet, they somehow thought, they being Means and Pryor, thought that this was going to be the smoking gun. I just don't see it. It's not going to make the case go away. No one's going to get charged criminally. And now you got a pissed off DA, and you got to now start worrying about your own ethics allegations that are going to be made to the bar after the case is over, more than likely. I think it was a big mistake. The other thing that I observed when going back and watching portions of it again late last night was the fact that when the prosecutor said, hey, judge, we'll brief this issue, we'll submit a brief, and Mr. Pryor said, no, we want this resolved, we need to get it resolved, and oh, by the way, this is really expensive. Let's just say Mr. Pryor and Mr. Means are charging, say, $300-$400 an hour, right? We were there all day yesterday. They probably spent a day preparing. So figure 8 hours at $300 to be conservative, that's $2,400 a day for both of them there, almost $5,000, not including preparation time, not including fees for the expert to appear, plus all the other drafting of documents and things like that. So Mr. Pryor said, no, it's expensive. I think Means also said, yes, it's expensive to his client. Let's just have an oral argument. Because guess what? Drafting that brief, going back through, taking the notes, you're probably talking at least another 20 hours to prepare and draft. That's expensive. But when the attorney starts complaining about expense to his client with something he created, you know that money is getting tight. We will see if the money that these two have been paid, Mr. Pryor and Mr. Means, is enough to carry them through the trial. We'll see if it's enough to even get them close to trial, or whether both of these individuals will be getting off and they will be receiving court-appointed counsel. That was the other big take that I saw when I went back through that the other day. If I have an unlimited budget, I don't care. I'm saying, let's go. I'm going to do whatever you can, because we have what it takes to go head to head with the state that has an unlimited budget. They will always find the money for a case. But when you start complaining about the money, you know it's getting tight, and you know that the pot is starting to dwindle. We'll see if they stick around. Next on the docket, two officers have been officially fired. That's right, two detectives, and sanctioned others for their actions surrounding the raid that left Breonna Taylor, 26, dead in her apartment. Detectives Mile Cosgrove and Joshua Janes were fired yesterday and are the latest detectives the department has terminated in connection with the shooting of Ms. Taylor. A third detective, Brett Hankinson, was fired in June for blindly firing 10 rounds into her apartment. Cosgrove, who the FBI concluded fired the shot that actually killed Ms. Taylor, violated procedure for use of force and failing to use a body camera during this March 13th search warrant. Isn't it amazing how those body cams don't always seem to get turned on, even though you know you're going in to do a raid? I just don't buy it that people aren't turning these things on unless they don't want things recorded. Now, Detective Janes, meanwhile, was the officer who secured the search warrant for Taylor's apartment, was found in violation of department policy for truthfulness and search warrant preparation. Now, usually, and I've seen this before, where somebody has a violation in the police officer's personnel file for truthfulness violations, but yet they don't get fired. They just get a reprimand. But yet we try to get that information because we want to have it to be available for cross-examination of an officer. And we're told by the courts, you haven't met your burden to get that information. And it was so long ago and we've all made mistakes. So needless to say, these officers were fired, and that's the way it should be. Officers should be held to a higher standard. I have said that before. There are lots and lots of good officers out there. They just need to get rid of the bad ones. Next on the docket, Past performance is indicative of future results. Now, I get it that people can change. We all have things that we'd like to change about ourselves, but some people simply can't change, and hence the term past performance is indicative of future results. For example, when you go and have somebody for sentencing in your case, and you see that they've been on probation 4, 5, 6 times, and they've never completed it successfully, and you're back before the judge asking for a probationary sentence, you have to be able to explain what's changed, what is different. Because, you know, you hear it on the radio commercials, you know, you can make $1 million, but past performance isn't indicative of future results. Most of the time, it is. Well, take a look at this. A convicted sex offender with an extensive criminal history is behind bars after police caught him inside a car with, that's right, a missing child in North Carolina. The 11-year-old girl was reported missing Monday in Kershaw County, North Carolina, after she failed to get off her school bus in the afternoon. The child never made it to school at all and had been kidnapped by Charles Dennis Hargett, 63 years old, while she was waiting on the school bus to take her to school in the morning. The police located the vehicle that Mr. Hargett was driving because it had been crashed. They also determined that he was heavily intoxicated. Now, Mr. Hargett will obviously give him the presumption of innocence. Some of Mr. Hargrave's criminal history goes back decades and includes sex offenses, assault and battery, burglary, child endangerment, and solicitation of a minor. So you would hope that people would change. You would hope that they've been through the process and rehabilitated, but sometimes past performance is indicative of future results. There are no reports as to the condition of the child, but hopefully she is okay. I'm sure that was a terrifying experience, no doubt. Now, we have said this before, and I will say it again. Just like our last story, past performance is indicative of future results. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for your background subscription service. When you do, you will be able to search anyone anonymously, and you'll be able to get a report. And that report is going to include information regarding their social media, emails, phone numbers, prosecutions that they've had, charges that they've had, convictions that they've had. You're going to have information regarding property records, marital records, and any kind of civil judgment. If you're going to be getting involved with somebody, now is the time to find out, not when it's too late, when you find out they do something crazy and you think, wow, if I had only known. And that's right, Scott Reich has always said, past performance is indicative of future results. So if there's something there, not saying people are entitled to a mistake, an error in judgment, it can happen to anyone. But if you find that there's a long, lengthy history, more than likely, it's going to pop up and rear its ugly head again. Go to crimetalksearch.com. Give yourself the peace of mind. You'll be glad you did. Now, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And it is a mob of people. Our dumb criminal contestants are everyone that stormed the Capitol yesterday, making a complete mockery and embarrassing the United States, no doubt. And these idiots, we are even beyond dumb, these idiots were going around taking photographs of themselves. Look at this guy sitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk. You have other individuals that are sitting at the Senate chamber's chair taking selfies. These people are not protesters. We have said this throughout the summer when there was violence. I will be the first one to tell you, you have a First Amendment right to go and protest. But as soon as you start breaking laws, as soon as you start damaging property, burning something down, breaking windows, I do not care if it's private property or government property, you are no longer a protester. You are no longer protected by the First Amendment. You are a criminal, and you need to be prosecuted. Now, we can't give dumb criminal contestant shirts out to all of these knuckleheads yesterday, but any one of them who breached the line that the police had set up and entered the Capitol, damaged something, took something out, had no right to be there. You are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I think as a mob, you may win. Heck, you may be in the running for the dumb criminal contestant of the year. Because not only did you embarrass yourself, you embarrassed the United States of America. This is not how elections are resolved. This is how they're resolved in banana republics. Embarrassing. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We will see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.